Welcome to the Farm Beats Podcast.
Farm Beats is proudly produced by Nebraska Digital Agriculture Team and hosted by students at the University of Nebraska.
The Farm Beats Podcast comes to you each week to discuss the trends, the realities, and the value of digital agriculture.
Through interviews with expert producers and innovators from across the agriculture industry, we hope that you step away from each episode with new practical knowledge of digital agriculture technology. Hello, Farm Beats followers, and welcome to another episode of Farm Beat Podcast.
I'm Rana.
And I'm Anna.
And we are glad to have you with us as we begin our discussion on soil sensing tools to support carbon market with Omar Murad,
a postdoc for Biological System Engineer Department at UNL. Hello, Omar. It's really nice to have you here.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm very excited to, you know, join in this podcast.
So can you please introduce yourself and talk about your career until this now?
Yeah, it's a long story. I started my bachelor's in Bangladesh. I did my bachelor's in civil engineering. So right after doing my engineering, I went to Malaysia for my master's degree, where I completed my geotechnical engineering master's from there. So when I was doing the geotechnical engineering, I was doing the same soil stuff, but for the structures. So the stuff I'm working for my PhD, it was pretty similar, but not anywhere related to the agricultural application. So when I finished my master's, I just applied for scholarships in different places, and I got a good opportunity in University of Sydney. So I just came to know that it's a really famous group of researcher work there, and the application is in agriculture. So there is quite a bit of a differences switching from geotechnical perspective to an agriculture, but it was nice, and I liked it so much. So I went there, I grabbed that opportunity, and I did my PhD from there. So basically, by training, I'm a soil physicist.
Mm-hmm.
So where I did my, quite a few of work in soil physics, in different properties of soil, just try to get those properties, measure those or estimate those using some non-destructive alternative ways rather than conventional ways for difference of reasons. So from there, one of the project I had, which is the penetrometer system that I'm working till now. So that penetrometer actually sent from UNL to University of Sydney. So we had a previous collaboration already. So just working on that penetrometer, that was my final project for my PhD. So when I did that, I feel very thrilled to know how this works and why we're doing this is all because of the soil carbon stuff and why this is important and everything. So that got my interest so much. And when I was almost at the end of my PhD, I got a really good opportunity to work for our industry. Then I started working for a company there, which mostly focused on soil carbon sequestration auditing company. So they were working very closely with government, with all the regulations, with Australian government for soil organic carbon measurements, the stock measurements. Was there about a year. Then I found out, I was actually searching for some ways to be more connected with the penetrometer system I worked for my PhD. So then I came to know, UNL got an opportunity so I can come here as a postdoc. I applied for that, and I was lucky enough to got that opportunity. So right after that, I came here about 2.5 years ago. And then from then, I was working in the same project, which is a smart farm project from DOE ARPA-E funding project. So that project, basically, we are developing a penetrometer system or a handheld system for rapid carbon measurements. So, we are still collaborated with University of Sydney, and then we have our PI is from, and our group is from Soil Health Institute. We have a commercial partner, Yardstick. So yeah, we are almost approaching to the end of this project. And we from the UNL, we are working on the deep sea penetrometer that can go up to 1 meter length. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all. I mean, in short, my whole career up to now.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating journey. Like, you start as an engineer and then you continue developing into the agriculture field. Yeah. But before we're going too far, do you mind to explain, like, how does the soil sequestration or soil carbon stock work? Maybe like our listeners were not really familiar with that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'd love to do that. So basically what happens, the concept is, to the photosynthesis procedure, plant gets the carbon dioxide from the environment. It uses a very small amount, mm-hmm. but most of them are actually send it to the about 40%, mm-hmm. as far as I remember. So send it to the soil, mm-hmm. as a compound. For that, it's getting those all other nutrients. So it's an exchange process. So when it's going to the soil, basically all the fungi and microbes, they use them to survive. So the much carbon going to the ground, more microbes gonna actually grow there. Mm-hmm. So we see a very small amount of fungi as a maybe mushroom, mm-hmm. but that's really small. The actual thing happens under the ground. Mm-hmm. So the concept is, the more we can gather these carbon dioxides from the plants and store them, like supply them to the soil, mm-hmm. and keep them there. That's very important. So not, I mean, it's a continuous process. Always carbons go there. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, with our conventional system, management systems for agriculture, we used to till, we used to not do any sustainable managements, like not a crop residue, we don't keep it, mm-hmm. and all other stuff. So that carbon dioxide goes into the environment again. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, for the sustainable agriculture management, mm-hmm. we are trying to educate farmers and growers so that they know how to sustainably manage their field. Mm-hmm. For in these cases, let's say no-till system, we can say cover crop system, we are keeping all the residuals, and so all these basically helps to keep those carbon into the ground, mm-hmm. and also, like, it helps to even store. So we got like two benefits here. One, it's improving soil health system, just because carbon is going to the ground, microbes use it. So the more the microbial community use them, mm-hmm. so that's much more better for a sustainable agricultural system. At the same time, the other concept is that soil carbon sequestration, or the carbon farming, mm-hmm. is the amount of carbon we are storing, or farmer can store into the ground. They got paid in terms of like how much carbon they are storing actually, and mm-hmm. over the period. So the idea is, normally we do that baseline, let's say the 0 year, and then we go 3 years, 5 years, or 10 years after to see what is the amount of growth. And then there is a protocol in different countries. Even we have here, like Avera with mm-hmm. ACR and CAR, they have this protocol where they can actually issue carbon. Mm-hmm. So let's say we have tons of hectare carbon at the baseline, and then after 5 years it went to 1500. Mm-hmm. So for this 500, actually farmers got paid. Can get paid, mm-hmm. but they need to go through the actual process so that mm-hmm. they can register for that increment of the carbon, and they can get paid now the question is, who's gonna pay for that? So there are like a few, quite a few countries who mm-hmm. actually agreed to that IPCC meetings, mm-hmm. like they're going to be subsidized for their carbon emission already. Mm-hmm. So they are trying to compensate for that. Mm-hmm. But also we have other Companies like the volunteer companies, like let's say Microsoft or Apple, they also sometimes do some voluntary carbon. They also buy these carbon credits from the market from different countries all over the world, which is certified well, so that they can ultimately they can say or. They can say part of their company or the whole full of their company is getting carbon neutral. So there is a huge market there. So we just need to do good research and then and we need to practice them well and make aware everyone what's going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How you get involved in this, like how you started and how you get involved in this, all this process?
Okay, so yeah, I mean, to be honest, when I was doing my PhD, I wasn't really, I didn't know much about this. So I came to know much more when I joined that company right after my PhD. So I was involved in two different things there. So one is that I was doing all the geometrics modeling for them, where I was using my soil spectroscopy technique to rapidly measure soil carbon. And at the same time, I was also involved in the like the protocols, how we can efficiently calculate these carbons and and to understand more how this is how all these calculations going on, what are the let's say safety or the marginal factors are there so that no one can know. I mean, we don't overestimate these carbons. So I mean, when I started working for that company and I was there for about a year, I came to know much more in detail, like how this is happening. And that actually, I got really fascinated, like, yeah, that's pretty cool. And really, I started thinking of if we can, if like, let's say, maybe 10, 20% agricultural lands of all over the world can adopt these practices, maybe even though there's a small amount, it depends actually how much soil really can sequestrate, depends on soil types and many more soil pedalosis. But if we can still start this process and we can get involved like 10-20%, that's going to be huge. And and another thing that fascinated me more, so it's not only like is the best way really to sequester carbon. The way conventional way we are doing the farming, we are actually leaving or releasing this carbon from soil to atmosphere. So I mean, maybe millions of years it took normally to store them, but we are doing tilling over and over. We are not maintaining them sustainably, and we are using so much fertilizer, and it has so much impact, you know, environmental impact if we don't go the sustainable ways, you know. So I think that's also, we need to stop releasing this carbon. At the same time, we have to store them. So that makes me think, and I always say to the to everyone, like the one thing, the most important thing I got from my PhD program is after finishing my PhD, I get to know what I'm going to do for rest of my life, which is I'm going to do soil carbon stuff and basically soil spectroscopy. It's not only soil carbon, because soil spectroscopy and the penetrometer system I'm working on now, it has a lot of potential. Like we can include so many sensors into that system that can actually help. And with the, obviously with the help of advanced machine learning modeling and AI modeling, like we can really get a lot of information. So that's going to be really helpful. And obviously this conventional methods are not sustainable in terms of, it's not it's expensive, it's it takes a lot of time to gather this information. But if you can come up with some sort of advanced method, advanced tools like the one I'm working, it's going to be really good for future.
Yeah, that's really an interesting way to explain like how you can connect like from the conventional way to, you know, like measure the carbon, and until you bring up the technologies with that. Do you mind to elaborate more, like since you're working now with the smart farm project you mentioned before, like what kind of technologies that you're working on and how can it really contribute to the carbon market? Is it like we measure the carbon with that? I mean, like how can the users can use the technology?
So basically, for organic carbon, we use soil spectroscopy.
Mm-hmm.
So we I mean, soil spectroscopy have more, I mean conventionally and traditionally we use sort of three range of spectroscopy, which is a near infrared, visual and near infrared, or the MIR range, so which is a mid infrared range. So basically, now we are focusing on visible and near infrared range, just because we use the diffuse reflectance, so it's way faster to get those reflectances, and that also carries quite a really important regions that covers, so that we can know really good information about the hydrogen oxygen bonding and some other mineral stuff, specifically clay. So we know, and I mean we know that, like, which soil can, I mean we can actually model which soil has a higher amount of carbon and lower amount of carbon, because we have spectral signatures in it. So the technology is completely based on visual NIR spectroscopy. At the same time, we are using cone penetrations. So basically, the tool I'm working on, it is a penetrometer. So as you can know from the name, it's a long shaft, and it has a conical shape at the bottom. So we have a hydraulic system. We have an ATV mounted hydraulic system that can really push it into the ground. And when we are pushing it, so it's actually recording that visual NIR, vis NIR spectra, and soil penetration force that's required to penetrate it into the soil with the depth. So it all we can gather all this information at a really high resolution, let's say 2 centimeter resolution. So we know, like, what's going on for every 2 centimeter, pretty much. And we can then we gather this information or spectra. We model them with our chemometrics model, and obviously literature shows, like, we have a really good relationship with organic carbon with this Wiesenauer spectra. The reason we use the penetration force, it's to predict or estimate the bulk density. Because with the help of the spectra, where we have information about organic content, clay, and then at the same time we have the information about the penetration force, so we are trying to predict bulk density from there. So these two property, why we are focusing on these two, because these two properties important, or that's the only two properties required for calculating the carbon stock. So we just need the depth, which already we have, to know what is the carbon amount of carbons there. So from the Smart Farm project, UNL is working on this deep sea penetrometer, we call it, that can go up to 1 meter. And we have a commercial partner, which is Earthstick. So they got a handheld system, because with that they literally have a drilling device that goes into that penetrometer system, and that has only 45 centimeter, and they can have a good estimation of soil organic carbon from the spectra. And they're instead of penetration force, they are using the torque. So this torque also can give good information about the bulk density. So but yeah, as back coming back to our project, is basically that penetrometer system that can go, and we know, like, 1 meter should be a good depth, because there could be quite a few plants that goes into that dip, the roots can go, so we need to know the deeper as possible. So and yeah, I mean, we have, like, really good expertise from Soil Health Institute. And we have a really good expertise from University of Sydney that's based on the stratification system. So another really good thing I want to include here is we can always argue whether these devices or these two is as accurate as conventional methods or not?
Yeah,
so that is a big question. Maybe you also had this question. So I want to answer that, like, I mean, obviously conventional methods are good, like they're really good, and maybe you know, the operational error is less, but we are also getting good predictions from NIR spectrometers, maybe not as good as conventional methods. But the idea is, let's say if we have a 100 hectare of our land, let's say, and conventionally, if you want to go, maybe we're going to choose one, maximum two, like soil cores from 1 hectare. Because it's obviously, it takes a lot of time, and it's a huge expense there.
Yeah, and labor intensive of too, course. Right?
Yes. So instead of that, what we can do is, for the same 100 hectare field, we can go with our pantometer system, and maybe within 1 hectare, we can do 5 pushes there. So from different locations, right? We do advanced stratification based on everything, like even cost into the model, like, if we want to measure that sort of changes, small changes in soil carbon stock, how many cores we need. So we also have these measurements, and we go with these. So we do our penetrations. And the idea is, you know, we all know soil is very variable. Like, it's spatially, it's hugely variable. So the idea is, the more we can take measurements, even though they're less accurate, but still we are, since we are getting more measurements, we are actually reducing the amount of variation into the ground, and which is important, because like, for a field, it's the estimate the carbon stock in one number, how many within maybe how many tons per hectare, right? So we have to know a specific, we have to know as much as possible the information, how spatially variable it is. So that's how these tools are really important. And that's why it is important.
That is really interesting, the way that you explain and everything. How does farmers or common people can apply that technology and get that information for how they can get inside the carbon market, where they can begin? Can you explain that?
Yeah, sure. So about that, I think, for my own personal experience, since I work in Australia as well, so Australia is ahead in this, and I know a few European countries and even Canada, just because they get into this soil carbon sequestration and carbon farming or carbon trading concept earlier. So the thing is, they have a good programs to aware farmers, to aware everyone, and the amount of credits or the you know, dollars they are paying for these carbon credits, it's quite a lot, and they're increasing within maybe every 2 to 3 years. That's a lot. I can give an example. When I was there in 2021, it was around $20 or something. But now I think it's more than $50. Okay. So within this 2 to 3 years, it increased more than double. So obviously, farmers will be more interested when they will have, like, they will know, like, there's a huge opportunity. This is a side income, though. Like, they are... they are obviously doing their own thing. They are doing the production. They are selling it. But to just maintaining the good practice, government is giving this, the voluntary carbon market is giving these opportunities to them. So about the question, I think, obviously, we just need to, do a more our due diligence to this concept, and get our farmers, producers more involved in it. We need to tell everyone our extensions program needs to have some more good programs for these, so that people can know better about this, and also their long-term advantages. So some farmers or producers can easily argue on that, like, if we do this, maybe we have a less I mean, production for a few years, but long term, when their field is already gone through some sustainable management, it's gonna be healthier.
Yeah.
So they're gonna need less. Less additional fertilizers. Maybe small amount, but still less. But at the same time, the farm can go much more years without sustainably. So that is the important we need to really make them aware of. And obviously, I think our government is doing a really good job. Now we have these commodity program partnership program from the USDA. So that there's carbon commodity partnerships where they actually declared quite a few amount of money for as a grant, so people can universities and some good startups like the one we have with our commercial partner, they're all using these to actually study more. And obviously, engaging more farmers, more producers from different states of US so that they can, they can have these advantages.
If the farmers or like maybe the government or like, I don't know, USDA or others, like maybe Soil Health Institute and others want to use these tools, like how can they read the results and how can they interpret it into the carbon sequestration and then to the carbon market? Do you have like the maybe platform or like the application where after you get the data and then you get the results, or there would be anyone who will interpret that?
Right. So as per my understanding, so if you really want to go into this carbon credit credits programs, or you want to join, so you have to go through some accredited organizations who do that, who do these checks or auditing what you have and whether it's really you are allowed to get some credits or not. But I mean, even to go with them, like you have to have your own measurements, right? So from that perspective, there are some companies coming out. So those who only do this auditing stuff, so their job is to, when you're going to connect with them when you are going to apply for these projects. So they're going to come and do their measurements on your field. And then they also going to apply for carbon credits to these organizations who's authorized to give you the credits, basically. Like I'm talking about here, the VERA, the ACR, these ones. So they're going to have these, like they're going to issue this credit, and then it will be open to anyone, like government or some voluntary companies, voluntary market, so that they can come and buy these. Only then the producer is going to get paid. Obviously, these companies who's going to do the measurements, they're going to have their own commissions. So so this is what I believe it's going to happen. And it started very small in scale, as far as my understanding here, but this is quite big, like back in Australia. Like they are, they already have quite a few companies already there, and they are doing, thousands of field. They already have their project. They're doing that, and they're getting carbon. They're issuing carbon credits. So we already have that quite a few, but not in soil carbon or agricultural field perspective. We have that for forestry. We have quite a lot. So all the projects, if you check, most of them are based on like all the forestry forest carbon sequestration programs, which is a different slight different concept, but agricultural field we have very less, but it's growing, so hopefully there are going to be quite a few companies already there.
In addition to what you explained, I was like wondering how many years you should take this measurement of the soil carbon using the soil penetrometer, maybe like once in 5 years, or like how much you should, you know, data.
So I got the question. So here, normally we do the baseline. Let's say you're going to your field, do the measurements in today, so which is the baseline, right? And then In some methods are just like 3 years, then 5 years or 10 years. So we go after 3 years, we do the measurements, and we have this calculation, like how much has been increased. Obviously, I think in order to get paid, we have to wait at least 5 years. So that they with the, like, let's say after 3 years we do 5 years one, and within 5 years we know the increment is sustained. That's a good thing. Like many other countries, as far as I know, I mean they have like venture capitalist companies who go there, and they actually started supporting farmers earlier, and so that they can get a commission when farmers going to get the paid after 5 or 10 years. But farmers will be interested to get something now rather waiting. Obviously that's all needs to go through this whole process of the protocols. So there are some some financial institutes starting doing that. I'm not very sure here, but I have seen some venture capitalists companies or organization working on that. But at the same time, I also want to focus is it's not only the carbon credits. So you are also helping your land, your soil. So the soil health system that we call it, we like to have the discussion nowadays a lot, right? Because because we know like how important it is. So definitely we are improving that with this sustainable management systems. So if we can do that, then we have what I like to say is an additional improvement. That your additional bonus that you're getting from the carbon credits, but at the same time you are improving your own farm.
It's like it has the background of sustainability of that method as well. So carbon market, it's not just one way that you get money in the field, it's also a way to improve your
plant. Absolutely.
At your point, what would be the challenge for the farmers? Like, I saw that it would be a long way to go, like 5 to 10 years. But there is another challenge that you think that, well, that it's one reason that farmers are not interesting, or that it's one reason why the research needed to improve to get that market and to get that interesting for the people at the carbon.
So the first thing, if you want to go now and try to engage a farmer like to in this program. But for the first question, they will have to obviously know like whether it's really going to work. We got some quite a good research. It's showing like yes, we have proved like carbon is sequestering into the soil, but also some studies shows maybe not that much, but we really need to know from soil perspective, like why it's not sequestering, because logically, theoretically it should, right? But obviously it depends on the soil types, soil textures, and all different stuff, right?
Maybe so, the management practices would also affect that.
Obviously, let's say if you, even though you change it, still we see less carbon sequestration into the soil, depending on that manageable type of soil. Because obviously, if the soil is not a carbon rich at the first place, there are some low carbon already.
The sandy soil. Maybe.
Then you have a less chance, obviously. But that is maybe the first thing they want to know. And the other question would be, who's going to bear this measuring cost? So that's where our tool can really be helpful. Because these are really low cost devices. When there will be quite a few companies who's giving the service for this alternative systems, like the spectrometer systems, so that people can use them and they have to pay less, obviously, compared to conventional methods. So there will be more and more farmers will be interested on that. Obviously, that could be reason. And the other thing that I came to know when I came here is is I mean the protocol with that crop insurance. So here in US, farmers are pretty much insured through this crop insurance, right? But this crop insurance, there are many sustainable management systems which has a bit of a conflict with this crop insurance system. So let's say they have a specific timeline when we need to have when you have to sitting, when you when you have to harvest everything, and what to do after harvesting. I can't go much into the detail from my knowledge here, but I know that there is a bit of a conflict there, so that sometimes discourage farmers to get into more into these carbon credit programs. So obviously from that perspective, what I would like to know or research more, and maybe like what are the how we can really design or improve our agricultural management practices so that it goes according to the conventional crop insurance system, or maybe the vice versa, so that we can do both. Like obviously farmers won't risk the insurance system if they if they have to do some harm to it, if they have to violate that, they're not going to do that. So obviously at that that crop insurance system really helped to get confidence into the farming.
Yes, like should have like an agreement between the two things, like the carbon market plus the insurance. Otherwise, I don't think that there is a way that farmer will be like, oh yes, now I'm gonna be interested in this.
In the carbon market. Yeah, that's true, because it's still new. But I believe that the tools that you bring and the technology that you put there, it's gonna be like so beneficial in terms of measuring the carbon. Because what I know, like lately, some developing countries that still have forests, like maybe in South America or Southeast Asia, they start to consider jumping into this carbon market, but they don't really know like how much carbon that they actually have. So I think like the tools that you have gonna be like very helpful to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, obviously. So yeah, I was only talking about maybe in the perspective of the West, where comparatively we are, the rich community lives here, but obviously for these poorer communities in Southeast Asia or in Africa or some other South American countries, where we need much more awareness, and we have actually some different other tools. So that is more like maybe it's not the full penetrometer system, but we have some cheap and handheld spectrometers that already it's been tested to some of these African countries. We also work heavily on that. So these tools can maybe we still need to extract the core, but we will be able to scan them in directly into the field and maybe send this data. Nowadays it's pretty easy, right, to send this data to to some other countries who have done this or have a more experience in the modeling stuff, and they can get good information about their soil conditions and their so I think if we at this point, this could be one of the way that we can reach to the the producers in some comparatively developed countries, developing countries all over the world.
Like for the next step of these tools, are you gonna maybe having another kind of tech tools and like the portable one, but you can also measure the soil nutrients, or
next step to do? So we are already trying to include some of the other sensors to our spectrometers. And I know here a few companies already doing that. I know there are companies like they have video cameras, resistivity, capacitance sensors, and many other sensors. So we can have a really good information about what's going on into the soil. So obviously improving in that direction will really help us to get some of the nutrient information. So I don't want to say only spectroscopy is enough for soil nutrients. Obviously it's not. So it only has few informations that is really good establishment with soil carbon or maybe some particles, but not much with the nutrients. only we will still get some relationship, but maybe that's an indirect relation with the carbon. So that's how we are getting it. But I believe once we have more sensors in it, and the amount of you know, computational capacity is increasing, we can really do a lot of thing. It has a huge potential to know about a much more information like soil health indices and nutrient stuff. So in future, obviously, I can see some of the companies already doing that, and they're coming into the market, and they will have, I believe, like they'll have much more information that can be translated to many more soil nutrient estimations.
Yeah, that would be a holistic approach, so we don't need to go to the field and collecting the you know, like soil samples as we still did it today, right?
And it's really fast, like for our pantometer system it takes maybe 10 minutes to push into the soil and get it out, like, and you get all the data already. Anyone is interested to know more about our stuff or want to really see that that device, the pantometer system, they're always welcome and to contact me. And we have all these setups stored into the Rogers Memorial Farm. It's an extension farm of PNL, which is maybe 20 minutes from here, from the East Campus. And we can set up an easy demo there. And you'll be surprised to see our development there. And even like the hydraulic system, that's also a customized hydraulic system, and everything within one ATV.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that was my next question. It's how we can connect it to you to get information and help people that listen getting that information. That is also on a website for your page or any other methods that everyone can connect it to you?
Yeah, so unfortunately, we don't have a specific website. We're explaining everything yet. But obviously, we have some small information in the ARPA-E website, which is really brief. And then obviously, we have more published papers. You can go to my Google Scholar. We I always like to post our new developments in the on LinkedIn. So and also the ResearchGate. And also anytime, I'm based in Chase Hall. So anytime you can find me here, and also you can email me.
And for you think that has any other topics that we don't mention in this time? Like, do you have anything that you want to say more for our listeners right now?
No, I think that's I pretty much covered like what I'm doing doing now, and obviously I like to talk and know more about all these tools and also all this concept here for soil carbon sequestration projects. And I'm glad like now our government is doing a really good job with that climate smart projects, so that we are getting quite a good fund for doing this research and maybe continue doing that.
Thank you, Omar, for the engaging and the fruitful discussion that we have about this carbon sequestration and carbon market. So we have a tradition on the Farm Bits podcast, so it's like to ask for a piece of advice from you. So what advice would you give to anyone that interested in the future of like rapid sensing tools in terms of the carbon stock, maybe?
I think we should dig into more into our sustainable management practices. We need to know more how they're improving the soil, how we can really improve our soil health system. That's going to be really helpful helpful for everyone. And about the soil sensing tools, rapid sensing tools. So I believe spectroscopy has already, we are doing a research maybe more than 20 years from now. Yeah, we gone quite a lot, and also we have much more way to go. So we can include this spectroscopy with other sensing techniques, and we need to actually dig into more like how we can merge these and how we can model to predict better, and also predict some more information about soil. So we need a lot of people actually working on these so that we can have a really good development in this field.
Mm-hmm.
And one more thing I want to really share, like obviously, we are doing a good job in predicting, but this is not the ultimate tool.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't overpromise
mm-hmm.
that we can, this is the one tool can do everything.
Yes.
Yeah. But we need to be more open to the community. We need to be more open to the the learning
mm-hmm.
that we are already gathering day by day, mm-hmm. so that we can improve our device. And as I say, like, still it's not there yet, and it's not obviously can be a thing that can really replace conventional method.
Mm-hmm.
We maybe still need to do some conventional soil coring to calibrate our models.
Yep.
But over the time, we are going to be generating more and more information so that we can have a good libraries, like mm-hmm. Kellogg's lab from NRCS have mm-hmm. More than 80,000 samples scanned
wow.
with them. So we can get the leverage from that days, and we can have these for different spectrometers
mm-hmm.
so that we don't need to do more soil coring. Rather, we can use directly these libraries to predict our soil samples. So I would like to encourage whoever is interested, whoever mm-hmm. listening to this, is to join this community. We are a small community comparatively, but we have a really good, knowledgeable people out there. So we can really work together and help to the newcomers in this sector, and we can build something really good for the future, and to secure the
mm-hmm.
food for our future generation. That is more important. And yeah. sustainably, obviously maintaining a good environment, that has a less climate change effect.
Thank you very much to Omar for taking the time to join this episode of the FarmBeat podcast.
It is really exciting to learn the rapid soil sensing tools that can contribute to carbon market.
One of my favorite parts of this episode is to understand how to measure the carbon using the penetrometer.
I also think how fascinating the cutting-edge technology of soil spectroscopic modeling and soil stratification techniques can measure the change in soil organic carbon stocks.
I hope you enjoyed that episode, and we look forward to share another digital ag story with you next week on FarmBits.
Thank you for taking the time to join us today on FarmBits Podcast. If you have enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen this podcast to be informed about the latest content each week.
We welcome your feedback. If you have comments and questions for us, please reach out email or Twitter or on the review sections of the favorite podcast platform. Our contact information can be found on the show notes.
We would like to thank Nebraska Extension for their support of this podcast and their commitment to providing high-quality informational material to members of the agricultural community in Nebraska and beyond.
The options expressed by the host and guests on this podcast are solely their own and do not reflect the views of Nebraska Extension or the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
We look forward to you joining us next week on another episode on FarmBits.